As promised, the story continues today, Good Friday, the day when the whole Western Church is commemorating the death of Jesus on the cross. So as we dig in, we are looking at chapter 23 of the Gospel of Luke, following on from yesterday's conversation where Jesus had been betrayed and arrested and brought to a place of authority. And this continues to happen in chapter 23, that there's lots of accusations against Jesus. Some are maybe sort of founded on some twisting of what actually happened. Some seem a little bit out of left field. And despite all of that, Jesus doesn't engage. There's no attempt to justify himself. There's this sense that Jesus is submitting to this human judgment and justice, as perverted as it is, compared to the justice and judgment of God. And so Jesus is brought to Pilate. And when Pilate hears what the people have to say, he talks to Jesus, finds out he's a Galilean, so it's not really his jurisdiction. He's like, let's send him to Herod. Herod was excited to get to see Jesus because he had heard so much about him. He was hoping Jesus would do some sign that he would sort of entertain him, it seems like. But regardless of how much Herod tried to sort of engage with Jesus, Jesus gave him no answers. So even Herod, with his soldiers, treated him with contempt and mocked him, then sent him back to Pilate. It was like, you take care of it. So both Herod and Pilate are a little hesitant to actually do anything about Jesus. But the chief priests, the leaders, and the people are very insistent that this is not something that's going to go away or they're going to get over. They want blood. So the crowd is shouting, crucify, crucify him. Many of the same people who had been shouting, Hosanna, Hosanna, just days before as Jesus arrived in Jerusalem. There's kind of this back and forth with Pilate because he's saying, what evil has he done? There's no ground for the sentence of death, but they kept urgently demanding with loud shouts that he should be crucified, and their voices prevailed. And so they, at that point, led Jesus away. There's some interesting little side characters in Luke's gospel that are interesting to think about. In verse 26, the soldiers seized a man, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming from the country, and they laid the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. So what a story he must have had to share. You know, I wonder what he saw and heard and thought and observed that day as he labored to carry a cross. There were women who were already grieving. There were these two other criminals who were crucified along with Jesus, one on his right and one on his left. There's lots of people mocking, just kind of endlessly scoffing at him. He saved others, let him save himself if he is the Messiah of God, his chosen ones. They offered him some sour wine. But one of the criminals who were hanged there sort of joined in this mockery and scoffing. And, you know, I mean, I may have been wondering the same thing, like, well, if you are the Messiah, why are you submitting to this? Why are you choosing to do this? Why don't you save yourself? And by the way, us as well. And the other one kind of gets after him. The other criminal rebuked him because he knew that they were being punished justly while Jesus had done nothing wrong. And then that we get this line from the criminal, which is like one of the most beautiful verses of the chapter, from the mouth of the criminal, who says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. That verse has become kind of an invitation liturgically into the Lord's Prayer. You are probably familiar with the worship leader or pastor saying, Jesus, remember us in your kingdom and teach us to pray, our Father, continuing on from there. Jesus replied, "Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." You could debate all day if that meant today as in a 24-hour period, or if that meant today like in this current era, like kids of today, or the technology of tomorrow, a sort of broader, more general meaning for that time frame. But either way, the criminal is assured that despite his guilt and how he is being killed, he has a place with Jesus in his kingdom. Well, then the end is near, and it was about noon. Despite the fact that it being midday, darkness covered the land, the temple curtain was torn in two, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." Having said this, he breathed his last. When the centurion, who's the Roman guard, standing there, saw what had taken place, he praised God and said, "Certainly this man was innocent." And what if you're at First Lutheran on Friday evening for worship, we're reading the Passion according to Mark. And in Mark's gospel, the centurion standing there at the foot of the cross doesn't say, "Certainly this man was innocent." He says, "Surely this man was God's son." So an even sort of higher Christology from the centurion, who would be a Roman citizen, who witnessed the death of Jesus. Everybody goes home except for Jesus' own acquaintances, including the women who'd followed him from Galilee. They stuck around to watch. The next character in this chapter is a man named Joseph. And I think he's like the third Joseph we've encountered this Lent. We had Joseph, the favorite son of Jacob, and we had, of course, Joseph, Jesus' dad. This is Joseph of Arimathea. And he actually was part of the sort of authority. He was part of the council. So I wonder if he used kind of his position, his connections, to get access to Jesus' body. And so he goes and takes Jesus' body down from the cross, wraps it carefully in a linen cloth, and goes and lays it in a rock-hewn tomb where no one had ever been laid. So this is a great show of respect and care and love from this man who was a member of the council. He'd not agreed to their plan in action, but he could have been seen as almost complicit in what had happened, but we see that he, in fact, has a different take on who this Jesus must have been. So the women who had been watching, they followed, they saw the tomb and how his body was laid. And you have to imagine they're taking some mental notes now, you know, okay, looking around, this is the tomb, this is where we'll return to tend to Jesus' body. They returned like home, and they started preparing their spices and their ointments. And so that's where we leave off in chapter 23. The rest of the story then is a story for Easter Sunday. I think most of us know how this is going to continue, that we, despite the darkness, the heaviness, the sorrow of this part of the story, we enter into it still with hope, and even joy, knowing that the light shines in the darkness does not overcome it, and that the cross, even though it is a sign of shame and humiliation and punishment, becomes for us through this story a symbol of life and salvation. So we'll look forward to continuing this story with you soon.